On the news radio, a Senate committee okays legislation that requires political candidates to submit birth certificates to determine eligibility.
As I understand the U.S. Constitution, it requires that someone running for president not only be a citizen, but a natural-born citizen.
Grand Canyon Park officials holding back in their search for what could be a missing plane out of Glendale.
Assessing what they've got, going through it, and seeing if we can't refine. I think we're going to be able to refine our search area and then redouble our efforts there and see if we can't have some better luck.
They had an emergency locator go off 10 days ago. No trace of it, though. Scottsdale police looking for suspects who stole things from a car and then used the cards.
They took the victim's personal property, which included their credit cards, and later on in the morning they were spotted at three different retail establishments in Scottsdale.
The Yavapai County Sheriff's deputies identify a man whose body found floating in the Verde River.
The tattoo's been associated with the Wallapai tribe out of Peach Springs.
George Tanner.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Children's Advil. 35th Avenue and Thomas has a collision involving a motorcycle. 75th Avenue and just south of Thomas has one as well. You're also going to find some slow traffic northbound of the Black Canyon between Grant and Peoria. Children's Advil, nothing is proven to bring your child's fever down faster or keep it down longer. Children's Advil, relief you can trust. From the KFNX Traffic Center, I'm Wayne Allen.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, we are going to stay below normal as we move through this week of March. Normal temperature about 78, and we will stay low to mid-70s right on throughout the weekend. Overnight lows about 50. We find our skies clear to partly cloudy. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 72 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes, and when it breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
So if I'm thinking about quitting smoking or chewing, why should I call the Ash Line?
Well, first, the services cost people in Arizona absolutely nothing. You're going to get to work with a quit coach that knows all the frustrations of quitting. And medications for quitting are actually included with your coaching. Our number is really easy to remember. It's 1-800-556-6222. And did I mention it's all free? If you're thinking about quitting, you can quit, and we can help at www.ashline.org or call 1-800-556-6222.
Farmers Insurance has discounts for all kinds of things, like automatic checking withdrawal, driving a hybrid, and combining your auto and life policies. Plus, we offer discounts for many professions, including teachers, firefighters, physicians, and engineers. In fact, we have dozens of discounts that could save you hundreds of dollars. Ask the pros at Farmers about all the discounts you should be getting.
Get to know a Farmers agent, call 800-FARMERS or visit farmers.com, because ready feels good.
Discounts apply to select coverages, perils, and policy types only, may vary by eligibility and state.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchick.
Well, good afternoon. It's 4:06, and this is Legalese with Dennis Willinchick, KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. If you want to call in today, our number is 602-277-KFNX. That's 5369. We have an interesting lineup for you today. We're going to begin today by talking about the never-ending saga of the effects of Senate Bill 1070. According to the New York Times recently, since Senate Bill 1070 was passed, Phoenix has dropped from one of the top four destinations for tourists in the United States to the 23rd. That's an incredible, incredible statistic. And what I want to talk today about with you is, how has Senate Bill 1070 affected your business? Those of you that are listening and are interested in the topic, give us a call. Again, 277-KFNX if you want to talk with us about it. But I really want to know, with all the talk that's going on, everything written about Senate Bill 1070, has it really had any positive effect, and what is the negative effect on business in the state? This has been a topic that's been in the news lately. Has it been just business as usual for you, or is revenue really drying up because of the boycotts and bad publicity? Well, today we have on the show Glenn Hammer, who's Chief Executive Officer over at the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, and we'll talk to him in a bit about how the Senate Bill 1070 may have affected Arizona business. Before we do, though, just a recap. Last week, Senate leaders voted down five additional anti-immigration bills, an editorial in the New York Times declare that Arizona, quote, Arizona, the nation's leader in extreme immigration laws, is pulling back. According to the New York Times, the reversal has to do with money. 60 business leaders, including CEOs, presidents, and general managers of almost every major business in town, signed and sent a letter to Russell Pierce, president of the Senate, saying that the harsh immigration measures were having, quote, unintended consequences, close quote. They listed boycotts, lost jobs, canceled contracts, and bad publicity. They complained that publicity was so bad that businesses that weren't even from Arizona but had Arizona in their names had suffered. They were no doubt referring to the Arizona Iced Tea Company, which is based in Brooklyn, but was apparently boycotted after the bill was passed because it had Arizona in its name. So let me introduce to all of you Glenn Hammer. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Great to be on the show, Dennis. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. Again, you are Chief Executive Officer at the Arizona Chamber of Commerce. Let's start out quickly with asking you, what is the Arizona Chamber of Commerce for those of our listeners that don't know?
Sure. We're set up a lot like the, at a smaller scale, a lot like the U.S. Chamber on the national level. We exist to develop public policy and then to get our pro-business policies through, mainly on the state level. We spend most of our time at the state capitol, but we also get involved in some of the major issues on the federal side.
Now, you are a lawyer by training, is that right?
Not in practicing, but correct.
Right. Well, there's a lot of lawyers that are still practicing, but anyway. Does that come in handy in your job?
Absolutely, because so much of what we do is to help develop law or interpret law. It's a big advantage to have that as a background, and we're very lucky. We've had a steady stream of externs from Arizona State and some other schools come through our doors, and everything that we do at the chamber somehow touches the law. So to have that training has come in handy.
Well, as you know, the show has a legal twist to it. Yes. That's why it's called Legalese. But let me ask you, Glenn, to get to the point on Senate Bill 1070, how much revenue do you estimate the state may have lost due to this this bill, if at all, this now law, I should say?
Dennis, there are different studies out there. It really also depends on the sector of the economy. It seems that the area that's been hit the hardest is the tourism sector. Tourism sector is about our second largest industry, employs about 200,000 people. Respected studies that I've seen have estimated that the economic damage of 1070 was anywhere between $15 million to $150 million plus. So it's a pretty broad range. In addition to that, there's a lot of anecdotal stories from real Arizona businesses where they feel that they've lost contracts in other areas, such as cities in California that have passed where town councils or city councils have passed resolutions boycotting Arizona companies. I want to just say to you and to listeners, we believe that that is wildly inappropriate for those localities and cities to take that type of action, but that's still a reality that a number of our businesses have had to face.
In other words, these towns and cities that we've heard about that have taken official action against Arizona, or however they word it individually, they have not backed off of that, you're saying?
Some have, but some have not. And, you know, we're still hearing stories from Arizona businesses that have had more difficulty than they feel that they otherwise would have been, but for the existence of the immigration law.
Let me ask you this. I mean, is this a real problem for business? Do you hear regularly from your constituents, so to speak, businessmen telling you that this is really resulting in real harm to them, or is this something that's more imagined than real?
Well, it's real. This is one of those issues where there's economic harm. It's just a question of degree. Now, if 1070 were the end of the line and our focus from this point forward was on getting the federal government to do its job, secure the border, reimburse the state for the real cost of illegal immigration, we probably over time would be just fine.
Right. Let me ask you this. Now, the Chamber of Commerce, obviously, just by the very nature of its task, one would assume would be pro-business, obviously. Are you, as the chamber, I should say, not you personally, but as executive director speaking on its behalf, does the chamber take a position on the entire immigration issue in general putting aside the business effects of it. In other words, is the chamber in favor of these laws or not?
Well, we were neutral on 1070, as were most business groups in the state. And the reason being is that 1070 was presented to lawmakers and to the public as a response to federal inaction. It's very difficult to argue that a state with 2% of the country's population but 50% of the illegal crossings, that the border, as Secretary Napolitano likes to say, is secure. It's not. So 1070 was a response to that. Now, I'll be the first to say I get paid to look sort of at the future. I did not see the national and international reaction to 1070 occurring, but it did. And now we're at a place where we have the toughest immigration laws in the country, and you know we know that there's an economic effect when we go it alone. And our point is that let's take a time out as these cases work their way through the courts, and let's focus our efforts on getting something done on the federal level.
Well, do you get the feeling out there in what you do that SB 1070 has had a positive effect in some ways, given the negatives to business and to the loss of tourism revenues and obviously the negative impact it may have had?
I don't see a positive impact from 1070. I don't believe that we're more secure because of it.
But I was giving the benefits versus the downsides from a business perspective. You're saying it hasn't done us a lot of good and it's caused us a lot of problems.
I would say that.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, the there's been a letter apparently that was part of this recent spate of bills that was just voted against by business people. Did the chamber have anything to do with that letter?
Yes, and I'm not sure if my name is on one version of that, but there was basically a groundswell, and this is pretty unusual where you have high level, high profile CEOs signing on to a very to a fairly controversial topic, and this all evolved very, very rapidly, and the reason being is that these CEOs love Arizona. They know that these types of efforts have an economic impact, and it's not a positive one. And we're a state that we've lost 300,000 jobs since the Great Recession began. Let's put all of our energy into getting the economy going again, not on these types of divisive measures that aren't going to do a darn thing to improve border security, but they will do a darn thing in terms of hurting our reputation and our ability to get our economy going again.
Well, that's interesting. The bills, by the way, before we take a break, the bills that the Senate voted down would have required, among other things, that hospitals inform law enforcement officials when treating patients who are suspected of being illegal immigrants, and they were designed to prod the U.S. Supreme Court to rule against automatic citizenship for American-born children of illegal immigrants. We're going to have to take a break, and we're going to be coming back here to speak further with Glenn Hammer, Executive Director of the Chamber of Commerce, after this.
Halt Festival is back!
Huzzah!
Weekends now through April 3rd.
You love the Renaissance Festival!
Great shopping! A giant crafts market!
That festival is so awesome!
Welcome to the Renaissance Festival!
New shows! Non-stop feasting! The Renaissance Festival is back! Huzzah! Weekends now through April 3rd! Huzzah! Special savings from discount coupons from Hall of Frames, Ariba's Mexican Grill, and Phoenix Flower Shops while supplies last.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
First Option Lending, the people you call first.
Are you in double trouble? Do you have a first and a second mortgage that totals slightly more than your home is worth? Have you been turned down by banks and mortgage companies that simply can't help? First Option Lending can help. We've even helped people who were told by others to just walk away from their home. Nonsense. If you're upside down in your primary home but have a steady job and pay your mortgage on time, call today, because this opportunity and these record low rates may soon be gone. We can get you out of double trouble, because double trouble is no trouble at First Option Lending. First Option Lending, 480-751-3400. 751-3400.
First Option Lending.
480-751-3400.
License 19017.
All right, we're back on the air, and this is Legalese with Dennis Wilenchek. We're here every week from 4 to 5 talking about legal topics. That's a broad area, of course. And if you want to call in, we're talking today about SB 1070's effect on business. Recently, many of you may have seen in the news that there was a letter that was written to Russell Pierce, and that letter was signed by, I believe it was 60, I could be wrong, but about 60.
About 60
chief executives of various types of companies in Arizona, basically saying that they're not against, putting in reasonable laws and discussion about legislative action on the state level concerning immigration, but that some of the bills that are being discussed and that were being discussed at the time were really harmful to Arizona and Arizona business in particular. So we have Glenn Hammer, we've been talking to him, executive director of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, about these topics, and we have a few minutes left. So let me ask you, Glenn, have you had any feedback from outside of Arizona's borders in your I'm sure numerous discussions and travels as to how other people are seeing this from abroad or afar?
Last night I had the opportunity to address the Swedish American Chamber of Commerce, about 40, 50 people. It was their national board. Half were from out of the country. Half were in Sweden. They wanted to know some of the things going on in Arizona. And I just asked the crowd how many people have heard of 1070. That's exactly how I presented it, 1070, to mostly at least 50% of people.
Who's that buzzword?
Swedes, who are Swedes. They are not U.S. citizens. Every single hand went up. Everyone recognized the bill, and the reaction, it was a very visceral reaction, was very negative. And part of it was there was a concern as international people, what would the effect be on them? And I don't believe anyone, pro or con, when they were considering 1070, thought that this would be cause a firestorm in Sweden. It apparently dominated the news in Sweden over the summer. And this is not the type of thing that is positive for the state in any way.
Do you think we'll continue to see further losses to business, if you will, resulting from this publicity surrounding the SB 1070?
Dennis, I really believe if we could end the line at 1070 and let the courts handle these cases, the federal courts, with the U.S. Supreme Court in the next couple months will rule on the employer sanctions case. The federal courts, the Ninth Circuit, I believe, has 1070. I believe if we could allow the courts to consider what the lines are for the states, the state will over time be fine. They're still going to be damaged. You know, the convention and the tourism industry, there's a pipeline. That pipeline has been harmed, and that harm is going to sting for a few years. But if we could move from these tough immigration bills to measures like the jobs bill that passed a month ago and focus our efforts on immigration on the federal level, I believe the state will be just fine going forward.
Don't you find it interesting that a lot of other states that originally had sort of threatened to follow along the lines that we have essentially passed on similar measures?
I find it's very telling. You know, there's a legislature or a house here, a senate there that is considered, but these types of measures are not flying through other states. So I do believe that other states have been very mindful and are very cautious in this still very difficult economic time about doing anything that could damage their economy.
Yeah, it's maybe more of a timing issue. I don't know that we can afford this kind of thing right now. Isn't that basically the chamber's position?
And that the proper place to do this is at the federal government. Yeah. It's going to take the resources of the federal government to secure our border. And we're broke as a state.
Well, I mean, other than politicians making a big issue out of illegal immigration, which is an easy thing to do, the reality is that it's harming probably more than helping is the chamber's position, I take it.
The actions that we've taken on the state level have unfortunately had an economically negative effect.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because obviously the senators who are trying to do something about immigration, and it's obviously a real problem that needs to get taken care of. But your point is it's a federal problem. We should leave it at that. But, of course, their point is the federal government isn't doing anything.
And as I'll say, it certainly doesn't help when these bills are being considered. We have our Secretary of Homeland Security, who used to be the governor of Arizona, Janet Napolitano, announcing that she's pulling National Guard troops.
Yeah.
Not terribly helpful.
Right.
So, you know, we understand.
There certainly wasn't any mission accomplished that accomplished, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. Just made our job a lot tougher.
Well, I think Senator John McComish was quoted as saying that, quote, enough is enough, which is an old German expression, zu viel ist zu viel. And time to take a time out on this stuff.
And Dennis, I believe all the Republican senators who voted against these immigration bills, they all voted for the toughest immigration bill that's ever passed in this country, 1070.
Right.
These are not softies. These are just people that realize that these bills aren't going to do anything in terms of securing our border, but they will do something in terms of costing the state some jobs. Is it 500 jobs? Is it 1,000 jobs? I don't know, but it's. But these types of measures, when we go it alone, have a negative economic impact. We know that now, and that's why you have the Arizona Chamber. You've got 22 chambers from across the state, 60 of the biggest business leaders saying, let's not
enough. Yeah.
enough.
All right. Do you think we'll continue to see more attempts by the state to pass bills along these same lines? Is it just coming back another time, or do you have any insight into that?
I would be surprised if this is over. We'll still see some bills coming through. You know, it's the type of thing I'll sleep a lot better when the legislature is out of session.
Well, yeah, obviously, I think that's a good statement. I don't think that we've heard the last of.
No, this is not. This is far from over. But we really appreciate that a number of Republican senators took a courageous and difficult stand and voted for jobs instead of bills that probably still have some particular political popularity in primaries, but are not going to do anything to help the state's border security situation.
Yeah, according to the Chamber of Commerce that you head up, the devastation, if you will, of this bill, as you said earlier, was somewhere between 15 million estimated to 150 million lost tourism revenue. And we've heard, as I think the newspaper reported today, a drastic decline was quoted by someone who's vice president of communications for the Hotel and Lodging Association, pointing out that she and other business officials pointed to data on booking showing Phoenix's ranking had dropped from the top four destinations to 23rd, as I said at the beginning of the show. That's an incredible drop.
This is the most beautiful state in the country, and particularly during this time of year when we've got spring training baseball. You know, it just is not prudent to take to pass bills that harms one of our cornerstone industries. It just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, again, I feel that hopefully a corner has been turned and we've got enough support in the legislature so that we can focus on job creating measures instead of these measures that, unfortunately, while they may have some good intentions behind them, are very, very harmful to the state's economy.
Yeah, let me highlight that before we're done with this topic. In the letter that was sent in mid-March to Senator Pierce, it's a very short letter. It's a one-page letter, but basically to quote from it, these business leaders who were writing were saying essentially, in relevant part, that we agree with you, Senator, that our borders must be protected first and now. We also believe that market-driven immigration policies can and should be developed by the federal government that will sustain America's status as a magnet for the world's most talented and hardworking people and preserve our ability to compete. Meaning, the people that wrote this letter or signed on to it were certainly not, as you said earlier, softies on immigration.
No.
These are people that understand that there is a problem out there, as we were talking off the air. There is a real problem out
Absolutely.
There. Yeah. But the fact is, you know, when we're down, do you kick us down further? And it's just, I think, more of a timing issue that some of these measures, if the federal government continues to not act, may, as you say, have to be reviewed again. But hopefully with bills that that make sense. Let me ask you before we go, we only have a brief period of time here. What do you think of these birthright bills?
There's absolutely no way the state can succeed in having the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution reinterpret citizenship. It is a big loser. If you want to change the meaning of the 14th Amendment, you're probably going to need a constitutional amendment. Possibly under Section 5 of the 14th Amendment, Congress could do something. But this idea that the state can somehow do it, it's a loser. I feel that it really would be misleading to people that if this passed.
How would this affect business, basically, very quickly?
Oh, it won't affect business directly because Arizona could pass that, and there's absolutely, in our view, no chance the U.S. Supreme Court is going to reinterpret one of the amendments.
But it just gives us another black eye.
Absolutely. It's a
that
negative.
That can't be helpful to business.
So again, you know, Dennis, when you're doing that cost benefit, something that has absolutely no chance of succeeding in its intention, but it will succeed in harming Arizona business. Why go down that road?
All right. Thanks. Glenn Hammer, Executive Director of Arizona Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back right after these messages.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Malzberg. Listen to me from 1 to 3 every weekday afternoon on the 50,000-watt Voice of the Valley, KFNX, News Talk Radio 1100, Phoenix.
CNN Radio, I'm Greg Black. State Department officials say members of Muammar Gaddafi's inner circle have been reaching out to the U.S., but Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says their intentions are not clear.
The quickest way for him to end this is to actually serve the Libyan people by leaving.
But there's no indication Gaddafi is ready to do that. Toyota warns its U.S. assembly workers to prepare for the possibility of shutdowns. A nuclear situation in Japan is causing a part shortage. The Fukushima disaster is also prompting a safety review of nuclear plants here in the U.S. The NRC voted today. Lindsay Lohan says no thanks, rejecting a plea deal with Los Angeles prosecutors. That means she will stand trial on theft charges. And tributes are pouring in to the late, great Elizabeth Taylor. The two-time Oscar winner died this morning of congestive heart failure. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio, a Senate committee okays legislation that requires political candidates to submit birth certificates to determine eligibility.
As I understand the U.S. Constitution, it requires that someone running for president not only be a citizen, but a natural-born citizen.
Grand Canyon Park officials holding back in their search for what could be a missing plane out of Glendale.
Assessing what they've got, going through it, and seeing if we can't refine. I think we're going to be able to refine our search area and then redouble our efforts there and see if we can't have some better luck.
They had an emergency locator go off 10 days ago. No trace of it, though. Scottsdale police looking for suspects who stole things from a car and then used the cards.
They took the victim's personal property, which included their credit cards, and later on in the morning they were spotted at three different retail establishments in Scottsdale.
The Yavapai County Sheriff's deputies identify a man whose body found floating in the Verde River.
The tattoo's been associated with the Hualapai tribe out of Peach Springs.
George Tanner.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Thermacare Heat Wraps. Northbound on the Price right at the Loop 202, you're going to find a collision there. Northbound on the SR 143 at University, there's a fender bender. We also have an accident on 7th Street and McDowell. Thermacare Heat Wraps, over 8 hours, more effective for back pain than the maximum dose of the medicine in Tylenol. No pills, no pain, just relief.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. Well, we are going to stay below normal as we move through this week of March. Normal temperature about 78, and we will stay low to mid-70s right on throughout the weekend. Overnight lows about 50. We find our skies clear to partly cloudy. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 72 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes. We're going to break here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
So you need a hotel near campus that's price-friendly but still has all the amenities, like complimentary hot breakfast, free phone calls and high-speed internet access, exercise room, business center, and outdoor pool and jacuzzi. And if each room had its own microwave and refrigerator, nice bonus. Well, there is such a place, the Hampton Inn North on Grant Road, just off I-10, less than 10 minutes from the U of A. That's Tucson's Hampton Inn North, Grant Road and I-10. Price-friendly with all the amenities. Hampton Inn North, 206-0602.
Radiant Jewelers in Glendale wants to remind everyone that every day, 2,500 teens use a prescription drug to get high for the first time. Help protect your kids from prescription drug abuse by remembering to monitor, secure, and dispose. For more information, call 800-662-HELP. This message, sponsored by Radiant Jewelers in Glendale. Their reputation for quality and excellence is backed by a complete selection of custom jewelry. Call Radiant Jewelers at 623-582-8600. That's 623-582-8600.
Help, I need somebody. Help.
Dave, is it really all doom and gloom out there?
Well, Rick, I can think of one bright spot.
Mondays at noon, here on KFNX.
The Elton Realty Show.
Your real estate survival guides.
The Lou Dobbs Show. Returning this country to the American people. 1 hour at a time. Monday through Friday starting at 5. Right here on KFNX. And streaming live at 1100KFNX.com.
IronDriveCoatings.com is offering 10% off right now for KFNX listeners. IronDriveCoatings.com, your valley-wide specialist for lifetime guaranteed epoxy and urethane coating of garages and driveways. Visit IronDriveCoatings.com or call 480-726-1891. Mention KFNX and receive a 10% discount off this beautiful lifetime guaranteed granite-like coating. Own a business? Ask about commercial application as well. That's 480-726-1891. IronDriveCoatings.com.
Welcome back. This is Legalese with Dennis Wolinchek at KFNX's downtown studios. It's 602-277-KFNX. That's 5369 if you wish to call in. We've been talking earlier with Glenn Hammer, the executive director of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, about all the immigration bills and the effect on business and whether business essentially through a letter by 60 chief executive officers to Senator Pierce and senators had an effect on defeating some of these recent attempts to pass various bills. You may recall that several states, including New Mexico, pledged to pass similar laws to the one in Arizona. But as of today, not a single state has done so. And bills similar to the one in Arizona, SB 1070, are still advancing in Florida, Kansas, Oklahoma, South Carolina. But in Kansas and Oklahoma, even though Republicans control the legislatures and the executive branch, immigration proposals have encountered unusually vocal opposition from businesses. Arizona-style bills died early in Colorado, and Nebraska decided this month to end its debate on one as well. So basically, we'll see whether this topic continues on in the Senate or whether it's dead for good. And whether Arizona continues to have to deal with the ramifications of the various immigration bills. And we'll follow that topic in the future. One other point, Utah, the immigration bill that the Utah legislature passed a few weeks ago, we should mention that Utah's new immigration law includes some measures to tighten enforcement against illegal immigrants that are similar to the measures in SB 1070. Such as a requirement that the police check the immigration status of anyone arrested on a felony or a serious misdemeanor charge. But it also includes a guest worker program that will allow unauthorized foreigners to work legally in the state. This has come under attack in our state various times. The bill in Utah came after intense lobbying by business and farm groups, as well as by some immigrant advocates. And it was essentially a compromise. It's likely to raise many of the same constitutional questions, of course, as the Arizona law, including whether it intrudes on areas of immigration law reserved exclusively for the federal government. But in contrast to Arizona's approach, the Utah lawmakers framed their bill to set up a negotiation rather than a confrontation between the governor and the federal authorities. Governor Gary Herbert, a Republican who handily won election in November, is expected to sign that bill. Under one bill approved 3 weeks ago, Utah would issue a 2-year work permit to illegal immigrants who could prove that they had been living and working in the state. To qualify, immigrants would have to pass a criminal background check and pay fines of up to $2,500. The bill gives the governor in Utah until 2013 to negotiate with federal immigration authorities for a waiver for the guest worker program. Under federal law, it's a violation for an employer to knowingly hire an illegal immigrant. If no waiver has been obtained by then, that is 2013, the guest worker program in Utah would go into effect anyway. Under a separate bill also approved Friday, officers would be required to check the immigration status of anyone they arrest on a felony or serious misdemeanor charge in Utah. Not everyone in Utah was happy with the new immigration measures. Several hundred protesters from immigrant organizations demonstrated outside the Capitol, calling the enforcement bill racist and urging Governor Herbert to veto it. These Utah measures, coming from one of the most conservative states in the nation, open an avenue for actions by Republican politicians who have been concerned that the strident tone of supporters of Arizona law, including Governor Jan Brewer and Russell Pierce, have allegedly alienated Latino voters. Some Republican leaders have argued that to win the presidency in 2012, they need to increase Latino support in states like California, Nevada, New York, and Texas. Among others, Newt Gingrich, a potential presidential candidate himself, and Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida, have pressed fellow Republicans to moderate their stance on immigration. So, again, we'll see how that all plays out in the future. We'll continue to monitor that. This is the Legal East Show. We're at 277 KFNX, Dennis Wolinchek. And we have with us for the rest of the show Diane Cohen from the Goldwater Institute, who's an attorney there. And we'll be talking about a case specifically, Wickberg versus Owens. That is the Tea Party T-shirt case, which, as I understand it, was just settled. Do we have Diane on the line?
Yes. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for appearing on our show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And obviously the Goldwater Institute is in the news a lot. And as a matter of fact, before I just came down to our studios here, left my office down the street, I saw that I'd received some kind of a book that was written about one of the cases that's going, I guess, to the U.S. Supreme Court. So, I guess.
Yes, clean elections.
Yeah, and apparently one of your attorneys there wrote a book about it and sent it out to all the members of the bar or something. I was pleased to see that.
Yes, well, Nick Dronius really took on this case and battled it all the way up to the Supreme Court. So, you know, as his colleague, I'm quite proud of him, and we are very anxiously awaiting the oral argument next Monday.
Yeah, it should be interesting. You might want to tell our listeners just quickly what that case is about, briefly.
You know what? I have to say you're going to have Nick on to talk
All right.
about the case.
So, well, maybe we'll do that.
Yes, I will let him know, and sure, when he gets back from Washington, he would be pleased to talk to you about it.
That would be great and interesting. I appreciate that.
Sure thing.
Now, let me just ask you, Diane, the Goldwater Institute has obviously been coming under some attack lately in the press. Probably nothing new to it, probably anticipated by it. We're not here to talk about some of the cases, such as the Glendale, the Coyote matter today. But you might want to tell our listeners just something about the Goldwater Institute, what exactly it is.
Well, yes. Well, the Goldwater Institute is really founded to fight for individual liberty. We do policy papers, as you might know. We are involved in I'm an attorney with the Litigation Center, and we are civil rights attorneys, and we fight for individual liberties to uphold the Arizona and United States Constitution. So
yeah.
We have many different things that we pursue, all in the name of liberty.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Over the years in my practice, I've seen, for example, the Civil Liberties, Arizona Civil Liberties Group and so forth, and they take a lot of heat because a lot of the positions that are taken by your institute and institutes like them, are not popular sometimes. And, of course, one of the things I always tell people is lawyers take positions, and that's the way it works. Sometimes they're not popular decisions. And let's specifically now turning to your case, Wickberg versus Owens, let's talk about that case in the same vein. On September 20th, 2010, the Goldwater Institute, for our listeners, filed a lawsuit in federal court representing Flagstaff resident Diane Wickberg against Coconino County and the Coconino County Recorder. Ms. Wickberg had apparently tried to vote while wearing a T-shirt for the Flagstaff Tea Party or something on the T-shirt indicating something to do with the Flagstaff Tea Party. And poll workers apparently twice threatened to block her from voting unless she removed or covered the T-shirt. I'm sure many of our listeners remember that. It's my understanding that this is not the only Tea Party T-shirt case that the Goldwater Institute has filed. Is that right?
That's right. Actually, during the last election year, 2010, we filed two federal civil rights lawsuits to protect the First Amendment rights of Arizona voters. And in both of those cases, they involved it was Maricopa County and Coconino County that enacted discriminatory polling site policies that specifically targeted members of Tea Parties.
Yeah, and basically, for our listeners' benefit, and we're going to take a break soon and come back and discuss this further, but if you'll stay with us.
Sure.
But state law bans, as I understand it, electioneering within 75 feet of a polling place. And electioneering is defined as a, quote, attempt by an individual or a candidate to persuade or influence eligible voters to vote for a particular candidate, party, or proposition. Is that your understanding?
Well, actually, it sounds like you might be quoting from a 1960 Supreme Court decision, or appellate court decision, rather. The statute itself, though, the Arizona electioneering statute, is quite vague and overly broad, and it is it bans political and campaign materials, whatever that means. So there's some case law out there that's actually pretty helpful, but the Arizona statute itself is very problematic.
All right. That's interesting. I didn't know that. And so we'll come back after these messages and discuss that further, I guess, as to what that really means. We're talking with Diane Cohen of the Goldwater Institute. This is Dennis Wolinchek on Legalese.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wolinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wolinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wolinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. What's the champ wearing? Looks like an examination gown. And from the back...
Ooh, that's not pretty.
Champ, what's with the get-up?
I've got to take care of my family, so I'm getting those important medical screens.
The fight is over! Champ, you look pretty healthy out there tonight.
But I'm still getting those tests. For a list of tests you need, go to AHRQ.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to AHRQ.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Communication is the key to any healthy relationship. But sometimes it can be hard to share what may make you happier in the bedroom. That's what makes Fascination so unique. A trip to Fascinations can help open the lines of communication to make for a healthier, happier, and more loving relationship. Fascination staff members are extremely knowledgeable and will guide you through Fascination's huge selection of love-inspiring gifts. Visit the 10 Fascinations Valley locations and accessorize your love life. For details, visit funlove.com. That's funlove.com and Fascination.
The Lars Larson Show is on the air.
The founders wrote the First Amendment to guard not pleasant speech or poetry. They wrote it to guard offensive speech, speech that was disgusting, exactly the kind of speech that some high school kids engage in. I've heard kids say all kinds of disgusting things. That may be an issue for their parents to resolve. It's certainly not something for the government to get involved in unless it constitutes an imminent threat to life or safety.
A righty on the left coast. The Lars Larson Show, weeknights at 10 on KFNX.
This is Dennis Wolinchek. We're back on Legalese, the program that deals with legal issues in all kinds of forms. We're at 277-KFNX, 602-277-KFNX, and we're pleased to have Diane Cohen with us from the Goldwater Institute talking about a recent case that she handled, Wickberg versus Owens. That's the Tea Party T-shirt case. And Diane, my understanding is that this case has just settled, which makes it timely to discuss. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Just last week, the settlement agreement was completed, and the recorder in the county in Coconino agreed to implement objective standards to enforce electioneering law in the county. And they have implemented a policy that sets forth the standards, and they've also agreed to train their poll workers who are really on the front lines of enforcing, these electioneering, the statutes and the policies.
Yeah. So what does that mean when you say they've agreed to objective standards? What does that exactly mean for the average listener to understand in terms of walking into a polling place?
Well, sure. I mean, the problem is that these, election officials were simply using their own discretion to decide what they thought should be allowed in the polling place. And unfortunately, when you have people who might have biases against groups such as Tea Parties, which was going on in both of these counties, in Maricopa and Coconino, you can't allow a state official or a county official to exercise discriminatory discretion.
Who was actually exercising that discretion? Was it just a poll worker? Or was it somebody, an official from the election department?
Well, I'd say there's the kind of, it's twofold. I mean, first of all, there were no standards in place to guide poll workers on how to implement the electioneering law in the polling places, and nothing was coming down from the top to say these are the standards.
Yeah.
And the word was out that Flagstaff or Tea Party shirts were not going to be allowed. And then we tried, Goldwater Institute tried to work with the county, both Maricopa and Coconino, before we filed lawsuits to try to get them to back off, and they were not successful, so we had to file suit. But, I do have to commend the recorder in Coconino County for doing the right thing.
Well, I guess what this whole topic raises, why I think it's interesting, is it raises all kinds of issues, really, free speech issues, the right to demonstrate, the right to be heard, versus, I guess, reasonable restraints, I suppose you would call it, on doing so within polling areas, because, again, there are laws in effect dealing with restraints on electioneering within so many feet of polling places, right? I mean, that's basically the issue.
Sure, but half the problem is no one's defined electioneering. The other half of the problem is because there's no good definition. County, state government officials are allowed to use their own subjective decisions, and if they don't like, the Tea Party or any other group, you name it, on any of the on any end of the political spectrum, they'll say, well, we're not going to allow this shirt, or we're not going to allow an Obama shirt, or we're not going to allow, a Republican shirt. So, that's the kind of stuff we have to put a stop to. And, the first place to stop is through objective standards. The second thing we need to do is amend our state statute.
Well, let's talk about that. Again, not being totally familiar with all the law on the area of your case, but it's my understanding that the Arizona Court of Appeals has said that the purpose of these kinds of laws is to prevent interference with the efficient handling of the voters by the election board, and to prevent delay, intimidation of people entering a polling place by political workers seeking a last chance effort to change their vote, basically. Is that pretty
that's
accurate?
That's about right.
Okay.
Right.
So assuming that to be the reason for this law, in your particular case, for example, the one in Flagstaff, what is it about this woman's T-shirt was offensive, I guess, to the individual who found that she couldn't wear it?
Well, the reasoning was, it's political. Well, everyone knows about what those Tea Parties do. That's what we kept hearing. Those Tea Parties. You know how political they are.
What did the T-shirt actually say?
Hold on, Dennis. It said, "We the people."
We the people.
It goes on. Flagstaff Tea Party reclaiming our Constitution now. That's what the shirt says.
That was the offensive part.
Yeah, and I have to say, Coconino County, right, before, after we filed our lawsuit and we were on the eve of going to hearing on it, they did agree that they were going to allow Mrs. Wickberg to wear her shirt. I have to say, though, as soon as they agreed to that and the federal judge entered an injunction that protected Mrs. Wickberg, on the heels of the judge entering that injunction, Maricopa County came out and declared that no shirts with the words tea or party on them would be allowed in any polling place in Maricopa County.
Well, let's talk about that. This is fascinating because based on what you've just told our listeners, the shirt actually said. Now, question, was there a, quote, official Tea Party candidate on the ballot? Probably not.
No, there was no – well, first of all, what's the Tea Party?
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
There's no one Tea Party. There are – we know there's Tea Party
sure.
organizations all over the country
sure.
that do different things. Some endorse candidates, some are strictly educational and civic oriented. And in fact, you know, when I cross-examine the Maricopa County officials about, well, you're banning Tea Party apparel, well who is the Tea Party?
Yeah, good
what
point.
What Tea Party? And they're, I don't know. Where's their address? Well, I don't know. I mean, who's
yeah.
their leader? I don't know. Who did they endorse? You know, it's really quite shocking, and that is why we need a clear defined
definition.
Statute, and we need clear standards to be implemented for the counties, which, by the way, of all, you know, the 15 counties, really, they're all, there's no uniformity.
What's sad about this really is, I'm sure the worker, you know, there was trying to do the right thing in their mind, right? I mean,
I'd like to think that, you know, had proper standards been in place and they'd been trained
yeah.
appropriately, they wouldn't be making those decisions.
Yeah.
But, you know, certainly in Maricopa County, this was declared by, you know, certainly by the recorder's office, you know, them
sure.
on their own. They made this per se ban against shirts with the words tea and party on them. You know, no similar proclamations about, you know, if you wear a union shirt, and we know that unions endorse candidates, you know, there's no per se ban on union shirts. There were no per se ban on any other organization that might endorse candidates or be so-called political, just tea parties. So
your argument was that wearing a Tea Party T-shirt was not influencing anyone to vote for a particular candidate or party.
Well, not only was it not, you know, advocating for anything for or against anything on the ballot, you know, that was discriminatory to single out Tea Party organizations for, you know, it was only the Tea Party or the Tea Party organizations mm-hmm. that were subject to this ban. And, you know, certainly in Maricopa County, this per se ban, can you imagine, you know, tea and party on your shirt would get you stopped and harassed at a Maricopa County polling site.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Now, for our listeners' benefit, you're saying the Tea Party is not then a political party.
Well, what's the Tea Party? There's no one Tea Party.
Well, parties can register, isn't that right, under the state statutes?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, there was no Tea Party candidate. There was no candidate on the ballot that said that, you know, Joe Smith running under, you know, the Tea Party. So no, there was nothing on the ballot.
But I mean, the Tea Party itself is not an official political party. Is that right? Or
that's correct.
Yeah. So that I think is the big issue, right? There's no filing by the Tea Party as an official party in the state.
Well, sure, that's certainly a large part of it.
It doesn't have candidates that register as Tea Party candidates, per se.
Well, there are no, you know, again, I don't know what the Tea Party is, because there's so many, you know, it's
yeah.
multi-layered, or, you know, many organizations that are Tea Party organizations. But, no, it is absolutely true that certainly on the November 2nd ballot, there were no candidates that were running under a Tea Party designation.
So in other words, just to be clear, there weren't any organizations calling themselves a Tea Party, quote, that supported any particular candidate in that election?
Oh, well, that's a different question.
Yeah.
Now, there could have been Tea Party organizations that endorsed candidates, but, you know, that's no different from a union. You know, we all know not only did, you know, the unions around the state and around the country endorse candidates, but they poured millions of dollars into elections around the country in 2010, for the 2010 election cycle. So, you know, that's not the question. The question isn't, do you endorse people? The question isn't does a group donate money, give money, raise money for candidates? You really have to focus on what's going on in the polling booth. You know, and in my opinion, you know, really now, is wearing a shirt with a Republican, elephant or a Democratic donkey on it, is that electioneering? Should it be? I would say not. You know, we are hoping that with an amendment to the statute currently on the books that such ridiculousness, you know, would be eliminated because, you know, who is that coercing or influencing? You think, oh, my gosh, look, a Democratic donkey. I think I'm now going to vote for a Democrat or vice versa.
Well, yeah, I think that's obvious that the question is, as you say, who is it influencing? And who's it going to change at that? Whose mind is it going to change at that point?
Right, exactly. I mean, I think that we're all a lot smarter than that to let a shirt influence our voting. But, you know, what's certainly not tolerable is discriminating against voters based on what they happen to be wearing and because perhaps the officials don't like the organization that you're associated with.
Well, let me ask you something. We have about 2 minutes left, but why do we have this law, in your opinion, that prevents people from wearing shirts saying, I support the Republican Party? Would that be okay if somebody walked in with one of those T-shirts?
Well, under current law, the answer is no. But, you know, we have worked with Representative Dial to try to, in his drafting of an amendment to the statute, to make such conduct perfectly appropriate.
As an expression of someone's opinion. They're not necessarily trying to influence anyone. They're just saying, I'm a supporter of the Republican Party.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's really not the type of coercion in the polling site. I think that the government's – I don't think it's reasonable, and I really don't think that the government should be regulating such conduct.
All right. So quickly, where do you go from here? You have one case left on the same issue in Maricopa County?
That's correct. And we're hoping to get support and amend the statute.
Well, Diane Cohen from the Arizona Goldwater Institute, we very much appreciate your being on here and explaining that case. It's really – brings up a lot of issues. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot more time here. We're going to have to sign off for today, and I appreciate your coming by.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. All right. Well, we'll see you all next week at the same time, same place, Wednesday, 4 to 5, KFNX. And we'll have some messages, and then Lou Dobbs coming up, and we'll have some more topics for you next week about the law that hopefully will be interesting for you.
When I said yes, it's because you said you would love me for the rest of my life. When I said yes, it's because I felt the same. Now, it's my turn to ask you the big question. Do you know that a woman can never have too many diamonds? There's a reason for the expression diamonds are a girl's best friend. Oh, but don't get jealous, because my love for you is very different than my love for diamonds.
London Gold has been helping couples express their love with diamonds for over 30 years at three Valley locations. Browse the largest selection of diamond stud earrings in the Southwest, located in Scottsdale, Arrowhead, and Chandler, and at LondonGold.com. London Gold, voted best in Phoenix and always better than a sale with recent price reductions on thousands of your favorite items. Take the guesswork out of gift giving. Diamonds are a safe bet, and they never go out of style.
London Gold.
KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
News, weather, and traffic.
Cave Creek, Phoenix. A division of Premier Radio Stations, LLC. It's 5 o'clock.